From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde in for Ross Reynolds. Cal Penn is in Seattle for the West Coast premiere of a new movie that he narrates, Icarus at the Edge of Time, about a journey to a black hole. You may also know Cal Penn for such films as Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Kumar never got much respect.
What kind of name is that anyhow, huh? Kumar. What is that, like five O's or two U's?
But Cal Penn is also a former member of the Obama administration, and he's currently enrolled in a graduate program at Stanford where he's studying cultural diplomacy. And he joins us now to talk about how he got into politics and cultural diplomacy. Cal Penn, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I haven't heard that trailer in forever, so it was a nice opener.
Flash from the past. So when did you first get interested in politics?
I first got interested in politics probably, frankly, growing up. And in our household, it was not viewed as politics as much as it was public service. So my grandparents, particularly on my mom's side, had marched with Gandhi, you know, when they were younger. And so the stories that I would hear that any grandparent tells their grandchild to get you to, you know, eat your vegetables, I'm going to tell you a story. They were all about, you know, being thrown in prison by the British soldiers or salt marches or things like that. Obviously, not until later in high school or college did I realize what that actually meant. And wow, this is the whole basis of our own civil rights movement as Americans. And so I realized, well, wait, politics was always part of our household, but it was never called politics. It was just called, look at what grandma and grandpa did.
So at the time, I mean, what were you thinking back when you were a kid?
I think when I was a kid, I kind of – there was a moment in, like I said, in high school and then certainly more in college when you know, what starts out in sixth grade as a tiny paragraph that is the preface to Martin Luther King where it talks about Gandhi. And then when you actually learn, you know, a little more about that, I thought I was sort of amazed because the way history kind of describes things as it should, you know, these great acts of civil disobedience and things like that. But to me, they were my grandparents, and so it was even more intimate than I think what I was reading in a history book. And I think that's kind of why I always viewed politics and public service as not just something you read about or see in the news, but something that can be deeply intimate that we could all participate in.
Cal Penn is an actor and recently a member of the Obama administration, and he grew up in New Jersey.
I did.
So other than kind of dealing with the bad jokes about New Jersey, you know, how did that experience change your life? I mean, or shape your life, I should say. Just New Jersey itself.
So being from, I always like to say, being from New Jersey is sort of like an ethnicity. No matter where you are in the world, when you find out that somebody else is from New Jersey, also you're instantly friends. I loved New Jersey. It was the butt of some jokes, particularly growing up in the '80s when we had some medical waste wash up on shore. But you know that kind of thing happens. I loved it. It was the kind of places that I grew up were always roughly about a half hour, 40 minutes outside of New York City. So growing up, I always sort of had the exposure to things that were happening in New York. A lot of our friends had different backgrounds just by virtue of being so close to a city. I thought it was a great place to grow up.
And what about your parents? Where were they born?
They were born in India. They're both immigrants. My dad is an engineer. My mom got her master's in chemistry. So, of course, you know, they did not move to America to have a child become an actor. but I think that's probably where a little bit of my interest in science comes from, where I'm horrible at it. I'm terrible at math and science, but I love it conceptually. I think that's sort of what drew me to what we're doing tonight with the science fairs, is that I like these kind of awesome sci-fi sorts of concepts that actually have real world equations behind them.
And I want to ask about the new movie in just a minute, but I also just wanted to ask about you know, kind of what that experience was like for you as a second generation immigrant. I don't know how old your parents were when they immigrated, but just, how did that kind of shape your sense of politics? You kind of mentioned this connection
sure.
to Gandhi and Martin Luther King, but you know, what was it like for you growing up as a second generation Indian kid?
So for me, I never really saw those two things as being mutually exclusive, right? I know a lot of times, particularly in academic writing or in journalism, it's, you know, we tend to kind of view things as, well, this is the Arab American experience or the Latino experience or the Indian American experience. And certainly there are unique immigration patterns that make that sort of thing true. But to me, there was never any mutual exclusivity. So when I would go to school and I would think, sure, I speak a language called Gujarati because my grandparents did and they taught us at home. And so at home, you speak English and Gujarati. And I would go to school and obviously English is my first language. But you know that your friends who you're at school with might speak Italian at home to their parents or Spanish. And so so in a way, I never kind of – I always viewed that upbringing as being wholly American. And I'm always like, well, this is what it means to live in this amazing – amazing place. That said, there are also, you know, culturally specific things that you notice. So, for example, there are, relatively speaking, fewer artists in the Asian American community, not because Asian Americans or Indian Americans are somehow biologically better at science, but because of the immigration patterns, right? Post-1965, with the Asian Exclusion Act in the United States, we had a shortage of engineers and doctors. So that's where a lot of the folks who are my parents' generation had the chance to come here. We gave out visas for folks that were studying the sciences. And so when you're growing up as an artist or as a kid who's in high school who wants to go into the arts, and you realize, well, the arts field is incredibly less diverse than the sciences, and then there is a certain cultural component to why certain groups or communities are encouraged to enter certain fields. So I think that was probably the only time that I really felt any cultural specificity. The rest of it was just sort of, this is cool, this is what it means to be American, that kind of thing.
Cal Penn's an actor and recently a member of the Obama administration, and we're talking about his life and some of his work. So how did you end up working for Barack Obama?
That's a very good question. In 2007, and I should preface this by saying I've always been a registered independent. So I registered to vote like a good kid at 18, checked the independent box, and have never registered with a party since. And never thought that I would work in politics, aside from the kind of public service family values piece of it that I grew up with. So in 2007, I was on a TV show called House. Thankfully had paid off a lot of the money that I owed from my college and struggling actor days, but I had a lot of friends who were in the military service over in Iraq, couldn't afford health care, couldn't afford college education, things like that. And as an independent, I was incredibly cynical about this whole process, read both of the president's books at that point and liked what he had to say. And then the funny thing happened, there's a writer's strike in Hollywood, right? So nobody's shooting TV shows, you can't shoot anything, there's nobody to write it. I thought, well, I'm going to go up to Iowa for 3 days and just volunteer for this guy. I like him. I think it was Barack Obama and Ron Paul were the only two who weren't taking any federal lobbyist money at the time. So I thought, why not? Let me see what this is all about. Was planning on staying for 3 days. Was so inspired by the president's team of folks. And at that point, you have to remember, it was the Iowa caucuses, first state in the country to have their version of the primary. This is a guy who nobody knows his name. He's down 30 points in the polls. Everyone's saying, well, good for you. You're going off and doing something you believe in. And I had the best time in the world. I thought it was wonderful. Everyone had really, really great stories about why they were there. And then one thing leads to another. He ends up winning the Democratic nomination. He ends up winning the presidency. And the three things that I happened to work on the campaign for him were youth outreach, arts outreach, and Asian American and Pacific Islander outreach. And at the White House, they were looking for somebody in the outreach office to handle all of those three portfolios with one paycheck rather than hire three separate people. So I was obviously very honored to have a chance to work there. And it's like, what are you going to say? No, I'm going to make some more stoner movies. I'm sorry I can't serve my country. Of course, I'm honored to come in. And I really loved it. It was an amazing 2 years there.
A lot of people would, though. I think a lot of people would.
I don't think so. I think, to be fair, look, regardless of the administration, there are a lot of folks from the private sector that take whether it's a year or 4 years or 8 years off and work, and then they go back to whatever they were doing before.
Cal Penn is with us. You may know him from such films as Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. He's also in town for the West Coast premiere of a new movie that he narrates called Icarus at the Edge of Time. It's about a journey to a black hole. So you said earlier that you're interested in science. How did you get involved with this movie?
So this project, I actually got a call a couple of weeks ago about this narration, and it's sort of a well-known fact with my team in LA. Like, Cal loves science and he's not very good at it. So I just got done hosting a show for the Discovery Channel that's what I call top engineers for nerds, or top engineers for top chef for nerds or engineers. And so one of the big things that I love about science is the concept of time dilation, particularly in physics. So the concept that time can move slower or faster, which is basically exactly what this piece Icarus is about, right? It's about theoretical science, relativity, a lot of the philosophy behind that, and then just basically an awesome story about a young boy who's really been living on a spaceship his entire life and decides to go off and test the spaceship he created based on all these principles. So if you read it as a book and know nothing about science, it seems like this cool sci-fi thing. But then if you actually get into the science of it, you realize, wow, there are all of these amazing deep concepts. And I just as soon as I heard about it, went out and got the book, loved the book, loved the script. I'm like, let's go to Seattle. I really want to do this.
Cal Penn is here, and another way in which his real life contrasts greatly with some of the film roles he's played, such as Kumar, is that you're a grad student at Stanford.
I just finished.
Oh, you're done.
Finally. 2 weeks
ago, I think.
A
graduated student. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what do you have now?
This is the interesting thing about that. I only have a graduate certificate in international security.
What's that?
Exactly. It's like a third of a master's, I think. Hmm. But I think everybody thinks it's something more than it is because it took me like 8 years to finish it because I kept
starting
and
stopping.
That's like
any PhD. It's
right, except like I didn't get a PhD. I barely got a master's out of it. But it was great. Stanford offers a couple of great kind of professional track programs. Mine happened to be in international security. I got interested in that. Mostly through my fascination with cultural diplomacy. So, you know, how are artists able to bridge the gap between, you know, civilizations or societies? So the people-to-people diplomacy kind of stuff. President Reagan did a great job at this during the Cold War with Gorbachev and the Eastern Bloc. President Obama's been doing a great job with the Muslim world and some of our friends in South America. So I was always really interested in that kind of concept, and I thought, you know, I'm an artist already, so I really want to learn the applications and the national security portion of that. And it was an awesome program. I wish I'd finished it in the year and a half like I was supposed to, but I'm glad I'm finally done.
What are some examples of where you see cultural diplomacy working, and kind of where do you think it could work that it's not happening yet?
That's a very good question. I think things like the Peace Corps have been really effective. And it's interesting because the Peace Corps is, you know, it's been around for so long. There's I remember in D.C. there were a lot of eye rolls when people would look at line items in the budget and say, you know, until this administration went in and kind of revamped a lot of things in the State Department, you still had diplomatic efforts that were based solely on Germany, for example. But the premise being there's East and West Germany. Like, well, that hasn't existed for forever. So I think there are a lot of those types of exchanges. I think under President Bush, actually, something that got relatively little attention at the time was when the New York Philharmonic went over to Pyongyang to play in North Korea. And that was, you know, obviously highly orchestrated on both sides, but really the first time you had musicians that were playing for each other and with each other. A lot of the great gymnasts and a lot of our athletic delegations that go over, you know, soccer is such a huge sport globally. The language of sport, the language of music, those types of things that I think are shifting a lot. And I mentioned some of our friends in the Arab world who, you know, are incredible at all these sports. There are so many sports and diplomatic exchanges that are like that. And I mean, like, outside the realm of government to government. If you talk to any of – I'm sure you've had awesome people walk through this building or, you know, traveled all over the world for their sports teams or, you know, even watching, you know, somebody like Robbie Rogers the last couple of months in his journey, and now he's playing for LA Galaxy. And it's like, you know, even a guy like that having his story out there so much is so inspiring and I think changes a lot of hearts and minds.
What do you think the connection is between that stuff, which seems it's not the hard work of diplomacy itself. So what's the connection between the two?
I think the connection is that sometimes we tend to forget, and we, I mean, you know, sort of holistically, you open up the newspaper and you read about some far off place and you think the way that the article or the piece might be framed about a specific issue, we often don't view this as, oh, this might be a group of people that listens to music. This might be some folks that, you know, just like you sit around on Sundays and talk, you know, with your grandfather about some random story, they do the same exact thing. Or what are the novels that they like? What's the music scene like over there? And so I think that the function that this offers is, if you think about any place you've traveled, and frankly, we even take a domestic example, the difference between living in a place like Seattle versus Chicago or, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, all awesome, amazing cities. I mean, they're so vastly different. We all happen to speak English, but the colloquialism, you brought up New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey is, if you really meet someone with a thick Jersey accent, very different than some place like here. And I think if you just apply that on a global scale, it immediately breaks down the walls that we tend to associate with our respective political leaders or governments, and it goes immediately into a people-to-people piece.
Actor Cal Penn is with us, formerly of the Obama administration. Last question. You've done all of this different stuff. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine what you're thinking about doing next, whether or not it's going to be movies or diplomacy or politics, some combination of all three. Do you have a sense of where your career is headed?
Well, thank you for that question. I feel like it's very very flattering. I hope that I will have the blessing and the privilege to continue all of these things if I'm able. I think my first love is always the arts, and our fans of all these movies have allowed us to make three of them now and do a bunch of TV shows. I have a new show on CBS coming out this fall called We Are Men. It's going to be on after How I Met Your Mother, Mondays at 8:30. So that's my big passion project right now. And then I would love to continue helping somehow on the public service realm as well.
Cool. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Cal Penn is in Seattle for the West Coast premiere of a new movie that he narrates called Icarus at the Edge of Time. Today's program was produced by Arwin Nix with help from Hannah Byrne, Cameron Drews, and Andy Hurst. Ross Reynolds is on vacation. Bernard Ouellette is at the helm from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm David Hyde.